You're listening to PorchDrinking.com's The Porchcast, brought to you by Molly's Spirits. And now, The Porchcast.
Alrighty, folks, welcome to episode 77 of The Porchcast. We are broadcasting today remotely once again, but joined by our co-host Corey David and our engineer Bryant Vanderweerd. I'm Tristan Chan. Once again, this is The Porchcast. We're very excited to have a special guest for this episode, the brain trust behind the relaunch of Boulder Beer, Matthew Osterman, Eric Foster, and Greg Owsley. Welcome, folks. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Unfortunately, Sammy is not able to join us. I feel like every single time it's like we need Sammy most when we're talking about the women in beer stuff. She's gone. She likes to just leave us hanging. So unfortunately, Sammy isn't able to join us for this episode, but we're thrilled to have a full house in terms of our special guests. And before we dive into telling a little bit more about the relaunch of Boulder Beer, I do want to give a special shout out to our friends over at Molly's Spirits. For all of our Denver listeners or anyone visiting Denver, explore a land of adult beverages and adult beverage discovery at Molly's Spirits, offering a curated selection of beers, wine, spirits, and ciders in Lakeside and Greenwood Village, Colorado. Shop over 14,000 products, including exclusive collabs and extensive craft beer selection in-store or online for curbside pickup or delivery. Learn more at mollyspirits.com. I was browsing the Molly's Spirits section the other day and happened to see both of our guests' products featured. So Boulder Beer and Stem Ciders on there. So great little plug there. But let's dive right into it. The reason we're having such a full house for today's show is that we recently saw the relaunch of one of the country's oldest craft beer brands in Boulder Beer. And you know, that was made possible through kind of a very unique collaboration partnership between three very iconic already established brands already. And so I wanted to have kind of the brain trust here, the folks behind this relaunch, to tell us a little bit about how this all came about. So starting with Matthew, Matthew Osterman, for those who aren't familiar, founder of Sleeping Giant Brewing Company. This all came about when Boulder Beer announced almost a year ago that they would be stopping distribution and closing down their tap room. And Matthew, you really came in and kind of resuscitated a brand that looked like it was potentially going to be dying out. Tell us a little bit about how this all came about. And we'd love to hear kind of the story of how, you know, Eric Foster and Stem Ciders came in, and as well as Greg Owsley and kind of helping with from the marketing side and how the storied brand kind of got involved as well. But let's start at the beginning.
All right. Well, we're going to test that pre-show comment from Greg saying that that I'm capable of rambling. This is a long tale, so I'll try to be, you know, moderately concise at least.
Our first 2-hour episode. Let's do it.
Wait, dude, I thought this was a 3-hour show.
Yeah, okay, it's like a PBS telethon. You know what I mean? Let's go 24 hours.
Yeah.
9:30. Greg, Eric, you got any data?
That's why Eric grabbed a cider and a beer before.
He's settling for the long haul.
So now that I've already wasted 3 minutes before I even started talking. So yeah, let's see. You know, we knew the Boulder Beer folks, and we'd been talking with them about their next steps, just in our normal role as Sleeping Giant, as a dedicated contract brewery, for those that don't know. That's all we do. We don't have a brand of our own. And Boulder had ultimately decided that they weren't going to continue. And initially, they were just going to pull production from the market. They were going to stop packaging and just operate the brew pub. I am a rare Boulder native. And so Boulder Beer was, in particular, for me, it was near and dear to my heart. You know, it's possible that I may have had some Boulder beers early on in my life, and Certainly made an impression to me as, you know, a craft beer fan when I was younger. And then as I started to get involved professionally in craft beer, it was a brand that I just really continued to follow. So once they made it clear that they weren't going to continue production, I reached out to the owners. At that point, it was basically the Days, Gina and Frank Day, and David, their brewmaster, and just pitched them this idea that I had. You know, Sleeping Giant really hadn't done anything on that side of the aisle before. Our responsibility is production. So what we do, or what we did, is we will produce up until finished product, and then it's our clients, right? They go and they sell it. Sales, marketing, that's all on them. So it seemed like an opportunity to me to not only keep Boulder Beer alive, but for Sleeping Giant to expand our offerings, learn a bit more about the industry, and help our other clients by becoming more, you know, immersed in their side of, on their side of the aisle, which, like I said, we were just, you know, not ignorant to, but we just weren't involved in it before. So, you know, I guess the romantic part of the story, if you will, is a number of meetings at the Boulderado, at the Hotel Boulderado, which the Days own, along with a number of other really great hotels and restaurants. And we just kind of walked through what my vision was for the brand and what we were going to do with Boulder Beer, which was their baby. And ultimately, they trusted that we would be good shepherds of the brand and that we could breathe some life back into it and that we could help restore it to the spot of prominence that it, you know, really once was. You know, you noted it's the oldest craft beer brand in Colorado. One of the, depending on who you ask and who you want to argue with, it's potentially, the oldest craft brewery in the country. So it was just impossible for me to let that go away.
Were there any hangups in the process in terms of their willingness to kind of pass a brand that they've had in their name for so long and entrusting that to somebody else, not only just with the beers, but the distribution, the marketing, like, or was it pretty much this all kind of makes sense?
No, I'd say it's fair to say that there were some initial reservations, you know. I mean, we were doing something that we hadn't done before. We didn't have our own active distribution networks, nor any distribution partners. Like I said, that's all just in the arena of our clients. I think the part that was not a challenge for them was quality. You know, something that I'm really proud of is I generally place it second behind the strength of our team is quality. You know, Sleeping Giant's built a reputation for quality. And so I think they trusted that and they knew that we would do well by the brand, but certainly there were some, you know, discussions to be had. That's why there were numerous meetings at the Boulderado, not just one, about what we were going to do, which beers we were going to keep, what new beers we were make, what the rebrand might look like. And how we were going to keep it afloat.
Absolutely. So, and for those who might be a little confused, this isn't a traditional kind of setup in terms of contract brewing, because I know that Sleeping Giant is known for being a contract brewery and helping other breweries scale up their production sizes, but this is a completely different kind of approach towards operations. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's accurate. So we're not the brand owners. So, you know, our status as like Switzerland, if you will, for contract brewing is still the case. You know, we don't own the brand, but we are in charge from an operational standpoint of the brand. So with respect to creative decision-making, whether it's recipe, branding, or otherwise, you know, that was and is fully autonomous. You know, when we went through the process with Greg and his storied brand team, I certainly kept in touch with the Days and David Zuckerman along the way, just mostly from an interest standpoint to get their feedback and show them what we were doing. But we had full creative license to go in whichever direction we wanted, both on the rebrand and for the beers.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned Greg. Tell me a little bit about how the Story brand kind of came into the fold, because for those who aren't familiar, Greg Owsley also comes from comes as a veteran of the industry and has worked with a number of iconic breweries before. How did you all get connected? And then kind of where did that lead the discussion for this rebranding?
Sure. So yeah, I realized I didn't complete the whole story of what you asked, but I wanted to pause and take a deep breath lest I be, you know, accused of the ramble.
Absolutely. And Greg, feel free to chime in as well, Greg.
So sure, I can make the quick, short segue and pass the baton to Greg and then do the same with Eric if that's helpful. But so Dave Duffy, who's the VP of sales at STEM, hopefully I'm using his correct, like, you know, podcast worthy title, but that's what I think of him as. Is that what we want to call him, Eric?
Dave's chief commercial officer for STEM.
Okay, CCO sounds even fancier. So Dave Duffy, the CCO for STEM, he and I have known each other for a while. The truth behind the story is a bit up for debate, but we met over a very intense game of ping pong during GABF at the Brewers Showcase in the championship. The outcome of that match, you know, we really don't even need to get into, but let's just say that we've known each other for a while. And so I called Dave and, you know, I've always really respected Dave's opinion. And I said, hey, I'm thinking about doing this thing, bringing back Boulder Beer. We're keeping it going, you know, what do you think? And so we talked about it and he asked me what my priorities were. And I said, well, the first thing is it needs to be rebranded because I don't care for the current branding and I don't think it's been successful. And he said, okay, well, the first person you got to call is Greg and talk to the Story brand about it. So this is my eloquent baton pass to Greg so somebody else can talk for a little bit.
Yeah, Greg, tell us a little bit about when Matthew came to you. What was his pitch? What was he kind of looking for? And kind of where did you see Boulder Beer as a brand evolving along the way?
I guess I should start with when Duffy called me. And, we'd worked together for years at New Belgium, and I knew his career at Brooklyn, and I was consulting for many brands he knew well. And I mean, so he calls me and it's like, hey, do you want to resurrect Boulder Beer? And I honestly thought it was already dead. So I burst out laughing. I didn't think it was possible. I had a long history as marketing in, you know, the formative years of New Belgium marketing against Boulder Beer. But at the same time, I had a ton of respect for it being the first ever brewery to come out of Colorado. It was my first microbrewery. Everybody on this call is too young to know what a microbrew is, but that's what we used to call craft. And I had a ton of respect for it. So I was like, all right, I want to find out more. I talked to Matt. He gave me the business case and that didn't really move me, but it was when he started talking about him being a true Boulder native and how he just didn't want to see it go away. And it got me rethinking about this is really valuable to the city of Boulder, to the whole craft brandscape, that a brand like Boulder just shouldn't go away. I mean, let's be honest, there's too many breweries right now. And the sad reality is a lot of them could go away and nobody would even notice. But Boulder Beer is just too important to what it did. And I mean, it was in its day, they were the masters of pun and the master of pop culture references and their branding ideas. And they were really pushing the needle on invented beers. I mean, Hazed and Infused had to be the first hazed beer legitimately trying to push for a hazy quality in a pale ale or IPA. You know, years before that thing took off, they didn't care what other trends were. They were setting their own. And the more we got to know it, I was like, God, I want to help bring this back. And in terms of the branding story from there, this is almost where I need to stop, and I really should have brought in the real crew, which was Andy and Zola. Zola's my daughter. who are the creative team at the Story brand. And they really took it over and brought a millennial eye to this thing and a fresh perspective. It also helped that prior to coming to the Story brand, they were both working in an agency in Boulder. They didn't go to CU, but they have tons of friends that went to CU. They actually were teaching a creative class at CU. So they're very well informed of what makes Boulder Boulder. So it was super easy for them to say, like, gosh, you know, they're like, Greg, this city has so much going on, and this is the only brewery in the world that can pinpoint its brand around what makes Boulder Boulder. Let's go back out and read on that. And it's like, oh my God, that makes so much sense. Plus, it's a super beautiful city. It's like, can you guys capture that in the rebrand as well? So, I mean, that was the approach they took, and Matt and I just kind of, what would you say, Matt? Just gave him a little bit of guardrails here and there, but they really took it and ran with it. And Duffy helped a ton too.
Yeah, and for those who aren't familiar, Eric, do you want to hold up real quick the can design so that we can kind of show the folks who are tuning in live? I love the iconic use of photography as kind of like the standard for the display of the cans. I think that fully captures, I think, what you all describe as the essence of Boulder, the city of Boulder, choosing these iconic locations to showcase on the can labels. And it's definitely a design that, you know, I haven't seen much of in craft beer before. So I think you guys—
I am curious, is there any concern or worry about it? Because it's beautiful, but is there any concern or worry that it becomes too Front Range specific, right? Boulder was a big beer brand. It was national, I think pretty close to national at one point, at least in terms of distribution. Is there any concern at all that all the thought and beauty that goes into the marketing might lose some of its essence, if you will, as soon as it starts to leave Colorado borders?
That's a great question. And we considered that pretty hard too. We realized we couldn't own Colorado because there's 400 other breweries trying to own Colorado. We couldn't own craft, which there's 8,000 breweries trying to own craft. We couldn't own innovation, even though we were one of the early innovators and pioneers, and we think we could recapture a lot of that spirit. But you know, when it comes down to it, there's really only one thing we could own, and it was the idea that we were from Boulder. And in this day of mass brands and everybody being interconnected, you know, a sense of place is a really powerful thing. An example I used to Matt, to kind of like, hey, I really think we should just try to own the idea of Boulder again. An example I used was Shiner, the beer out of Texas. And they've had a long history. You know, they truly are an old regional brewery. And they used to own the idea of just being from Texas. And then they did only great in Texas. They didn't sell a drop in Colorado or any contiguous states beyond that. Or, you know, any of the coast never even considered Shiner. Yet then Shiner tried to own craft, and that didn't work out at all because there was already these up and coming new craft breweries that were doing craft so much better and so much more interesting, and you know, young people making beers for young people, and it was old Shiner was all these old guys, so that didn't work. But then about circa 2004, I think, is when they started their campaign. They changed their positioning to: every drop of Shiner comes from Shiner, Texas, 749502. I'm making up the area code, but there are the zip code, but they reduced it down to just their area code and zip code. And they made it just about the old guys that worked at the brewery, sitting out with their hound dogs on a porch and sipping Shiner beer and going down to the swimming hole, or maybe going to go catch a few bass in the afternoon, or catch a little league softball game. And it was this colloquialism of Texas, this idea of culture that was preserved, that actually blew up for Shiner. They became the number three selling beer in Chicago and the number two craft beer in Los Angeles for about 5-6 years there, where they just owned what was very particular to them, Shiner, Texas, and this old brewery with old guys making beer that people, you know, in this disconnected world we live in, they gravitated towards. So we're trying that, our version of that with Boulder. It's like, let's own the site. Boulder is an iconic, classic, quirky, you know, there's only a few other cities out there that could level with, be on the level with Boulder, maybe like a Burlington, Vermont, or a Berkeley, or in Austin, Texas. It's like, it's quirky, it's weird, it has its own culture. Let's own that and give up on the idea of Colorado and craft and just be ourselves and on this particular idea of Boulder.
For a second, I thought the only iconic cities were ones that started with B. You were on a roll.
I know.
It's like, I know. It's kind of true.
I really quickly think of another one.
Boulder does have that kind of cachet, though, similar to a Brooklyn brewery, right? Where even just the name of the location just carries some weight to it. And that's really, yeah, I think that's a great way to kind of launch some marketing from. Tristan, I don't know where you're going next, but I kind of want to know how the hell Stem Ciders is involved.
Absolutely. I was going to say, we've got the branding, we've got the production. Now we got to answer the question, sales, because I know that, Matthew, you all had kind of explored the idea of taking it on full bore, but how did you guys get connected with Stem? I know that you've been friends with them for a while. And then how did that kind of cross over into this kind of very unique model of a business approach?
So I'll try for the quick baton pass to Eric here again. You're right that at, you know, the very beginning of this and when I came up with the idea, I was thinking about a few different things. You know, one was a homegrown organic sales team. And I liked that concept because I thought that it could help our existing client base. The other was a broker network, which I had been privy to before with a previous company I was at. And I didn't like that, even though it was one of the three ideas. I didn't think it was a good one. And then the third one was just kind of a like idea in the back of my mind that I was not STEM yet, which was like some type of partnership. And so, as I said, I'd already been talking with Dave, and I kept talking with Dave, you know, unofficially at that point, just more as a industry colleague perspective. And, you know, the more I spoke with him, this idea started to percolate. And then at least the way I remember it, unless I'm romanticizing this as well, I was like thinking about maybe we could do something with STEM. Meanwhile, Eric and Dave had that same thought, and Eric and I go back a ways as well. And Eric sent me an email and he was like, "Hey, Dave and I want to talk to you about this idea that we have." And I was like, "Cool, because like I want to talk to you about an idea also." And then their idea was the same thing. Like we were both kind of headed on into the same concept. You know, I'll let Eric talk about this some more, but you know, Eric had some past experience with a similar concept. And so, you know, before I kick it off to Eric, I'll just say like, for me, once we kind of got this out in the open, it was just obviously better because for one, I think it gave us arguably a 1.5, 2, maybe even a 3-year leap forward versus if we had done it ourselves and just, you know, grew that sales team in-house. And then two, you know, the opportunity to do it, forget about the idea being a smart one, at least we think it is. The ability to do it with STEM was like a grand slam. You know, I have an enormous amount of respect for Eric and Dave, and the ability to do it with them and to do it with a company that's in literally the same business, but two different non-competing silos was like just obvious, right? Like how could we not do that? So pass it to Eric to give it a bit more color, but that's kind of how it went down.
Yeah, I think you pretty much nailed it, although the way I remember it's slightly different. I think not an email that came over to you, but I think I called you early on a Saturday morning with this crazy idea, and you're probably like, why is he calling me on Saturday morning? But that's kind of how it went down. But no, I think you pretty much summed it up really well, how we got to where we are. And you know, Matt mentioned that, you know, we had some experience with a relationship similar to this in the past. And, you know, for a number of reasons, no fault of either of us, it didn't quite serve the needs of STEM. And I don't think it served the needs of the other partner as well. And we learned a lot about what's important in a relationship like this for both sides. And you know, ultimately STEM made the decision to heavily invest in its own sales and marketing team. And, you know, we were very excited to bring on Dave Duffy in a formal capacity, of which he had been advising with STEM for quite some time. And so, you know, it did happen quite that way. Dave and I were chatting about this, and, you know, it made a lot of sense. We were very excited about the brand itself. Boulder Beer was a big part of both of our lives as well, you know, when we were younger. And I think it was it presented itself at a really opportune time for something cool to happen. And really, as we thought about it, sure, there's a business case and we can talk more about that. But honestly, it just sounded like a ton of fun. We were, you know, hitting the ground running, firing on all cylinders. We had just finished up a project, although it was quite small, with Greg. And so I had, you know, recently started working with Greg, and all of this just kind of came together, like one day really. And called Matt and was like, "Hey, what do you think?" And he's like, "Yeah, I like the idea. I've been thinking about the same thing." So, I guess the basic structure of it, to put some color around it, is that it is a true sales and marketing partnership on the brand. And, you know, what we are responsible for is the day-to-day marketing, all the local marketing fund allocation, all the relationships with the wholesaler network, you know, branding and creative, kind of coordinating all of that with Greg and with Living Giant and with the STEM sales team. And then obviously, you know, boots on the ground with our individual market reps and region managers around the country. So plugging in a very similar, but as Matt said, just kind of a separate silo into this platform that we built seemed like a really great idea. But we had this thing called COVID that happened right when all this was going on. So it presented a pretty unique challenge that we hadn't anticipated, much like anything else over the last 18 months. But it really gave us a chance to step back, look at how we were managing the business and how we would like to manage the business moving forward, not only because of COVID, but also just some industry changes and trends that we've been seeing. And you know, this partnership and frankly, some of the changes that occurred because of the pandemic really set us up to be very successful moving forward. So, I mean, I think that brings us to where we are today, where we've been working to align the brands where we can with the wholesaler networks around the country. We've been focused on reintroducing the brand and communicating that it is in fact not shut down, but back and relaunching the new branding. But it just comes back to being super fun. I mean, the team that we've assembled to take on this project, between Sleeping Giant, STEM, and the Story brand, it's just incredible. I mean, I put it up against any in the industry. So between the team, the liquid and the can, the branding that's come out of this, and the wholesaler network that we're working with, I mean, we are firing on all cylinders.
I don't want to skip over the distribution side of things, because I think that's really interesting. And, you know, we've had you on the show before, and it's been incredible to see how quickly STEM has grown, even since the last time you were on here with us. But talk a little bit about, you know, as STEM continues to expand, kind of some of the advantages of being able to go in with Boulder Beer as an option, because I know that's kind of a unique approach towards pitching when it comes to sales.
It absolutely is. And, you know, there's been some big changes in our industry, in the off-prem sector specifically, well, and the on-prem, but, you know, distributors and wholesalers are really looking at their portfolios and what's successful and what's not and what's relevant and what's not. And, you know, they're picking winners and they're picking losers, and, you know, we're seeing it every day. You know, I think it changes the conversation a little bit when you can present a portfolio like STEM and Boulder Beer with one unified network of sales reps and marketing team. And it's a single point of contact that really simplifies the process. And it also makes two brands that, you know, the further you get away from our home markets become less and less relevant, frankly. And if we can align the conversation around Colorado and around ways we can be relevant within a complicated and probably crowded distributor portfolio, we can be successful. And I think this really helps us in that regard.
Yeah. I guess I'd be curious to know, I mean, it's unique that we have the production, sales, and marketing folks all on the same podcast. So that's pretty neat. What would you guys say, because it sounds like the brand is near and dear to all of your hearts. What would you say would have been, over the course of their tenure, the eventual demise of an iconic brand like Boulder Beer? And then how do you guys plan on overcoming those things? Because I'm sure there's still got to be a little bit of a hangover from accounts, distributors, things of that nature that are like, well, it's still Boulder Beer. I get it. It's a new label maybe, but what is it? What's going to change?
Who wants to take that one?
Yes, all right, maybe. Because a brand like that doesn't just go away, right? Like, and that's the thing, like something that's around for so long, I mean, it might be a tough question to answer, but it's one that I think a lot of people would want to know, you know, it's near and dear to a lot of people's hearts, not just yours. And it's unique that a brand that large, you know, might fall on some hard times, and I'm curious about your guys' insight.
I actually don't want to be the one to answer that, but I guess I will, since everyone's shying away. You know, look, it's a bit of a loaded question. It's a little complicated. Here's what I'll say. A couple things. One, through no fault of their own, just, you know, comes with being old guard. They were in an older brewery. We just happened to have started in 2015, and instead of you know, that the Boulder Beer has been in the brewery where they were since, you know, 1990, I think, is when they moved in there. Brand started in 1979. So, you know, we're in a 35 year newer brewery. The technology's changed a lot. It's a different company. We were purpose built for contract brewing. So we, you know, overspent, quite frankly, to get the best tech out there, because it wasn't what we wanted or what made us comfortable. It was what would make our clients comfortable. So I think from a quality and consistency standpoint, Boulder Beer was doing the very best that they could with, you know, the cards that they had, but it's just a different setup for us. And so I think we have an advantage in that we've been able to improve quality and consistency. And again, it's really no knock on them. It's just a difference of facilities, right? Beyond that, I think, you know, we see this with—
I got to interject here. That I fully agree with that, and you couldn't have put that any kinder. And it's absolutely true. I mean, they were doing the best they could with what they had. But I hope nobody from Boulder Beer is on here, but the quality difference now, and what you framed it up well, but it's night and day. I mean, that was the pleasure of getting to work with Matt, was getting to see so many of these breweries that I knew. I didn't realize that they were being contracted by Sleeping Giant. It was like, I can't believe how much better some of these beers are, that when Matt and his team do it with their technology and their brewing expertise, versus the brewers doing it in their own facilities. I mean, I think even a anybody's palate can taste the difference, and it's going to make such a huge difference there.
Well, also, just to jump in real quick, but as I understand, you know, Matthew, you also did some work in kind of modernizing some of the recipes, and I don't want to skip over Bubbly by Nature, which is a fantastic kind of new offering that I recently got to try. Tell us a little bit about kind of that approach and wanting to still pay homage to, you know, what was paved by Boulder Beer ahead of time, but now kind of modernizing that and bringing it kind of to the modern palate, in a sense.
Sure. Well, I, you know, want to clarify, yes, that did occur, the modernization, making them a bit more contemporary. I want to clarify that was my team, not me. I was a part of those conversations, but I don't get to spend a whole lot of time brewing anymore, which actually is a bummer. I would much rather be staring at the brew house than this computer screen most days. But yeah, I think a balance is a good way to put it. And what we wanted to do was hold true to the recipes that a lot of the Boulder Beer fans love. So for some of them, like shake, we essentially didn't touch it. Shake is, I'm going to say, the same beer, same recipe, just brewed on newer equipment, like we talked about, with some different quality processes. But same beer for hazed. Well, we made it hazier. one of the concepts from Greg and Zola and Andy was to call it the original hazed, because that's what it is. That's what it was. And like, that's not a, you know, BS marketing claim. It's legit. And so we made it hazier in order to be true to that. And then we played with the hop bill a little bit. We removed one hop that was giving it a flavor that we just didn't love. And so we played with that recipe a little bit, and we just made it more contemporary. Same thing with Mojo. Although that one got less of a makeover, we just updated it, I would say. But ultimately we stayed true to kind of the more like old school East Coast or even English style IPA that it is. You know, it's not a West Coast style IPA. It's not a New School IPA. It is what it is. People love it. It's a big grapefruit bomb. You know, a lot of Cascade in there, and people enjoy that. So we just contemporized it, if you will. I think, you know, that's a marketing word. If you can say like contemporize and stuff. Buff Gold, that got the biggest change. So we also played with the name there. Another great suggestion from Greg's team. So that is called SCO, Buff Gold Beer, for those who aren't from the Boulder area or not familiar with CU. That's an abbreviation for Let's Go, like Let's Go Buffs. It's a CU thing. And so instead of saying Let's Go Buffs, we say SCO Buffs, SKO. So now we call that SCO Buff Gold Beer. This one definitely broke a few hearts in the process, because we know that there's a lot of people that love that beer. It's still, I would say, true to its roots, and that it's just a very easy drinking, no nonsense beer. But we changed it to lager yeast, and so technically it's a lager now, and we played with the hop profile a bit on that as well. So that beer got a pretty full makeover. Although, you know, it's true to its roots. So then you asked about bubbly. This was completely Greg's innovation. I think this is an appropriate time to give Greg a nod to a lot of the awesome work that he's done creating white space for beers. Maybe he can talk about, I don't know who he can and can't talk about. So I'll let him elaborate on that, but Greg is responsible for a number of really. Okay.
Let's get into the juicy stuff.
Well, the vault is opening.
With a lot of cool shit along the way, and this was another one. So, you know, it's an intersection of, we looked at what's popular, what's enduring, what's trending, but not a fad. And so we drew a circle around. We basically came up with a Venn diagram of seltzer, lager, and IPA. And then we looked at what flavor profile is in the middle of those three. And even though it sounds crazy to talk about like a seltzer beer split, that is what we set out to do. So, I don't remember if it was, I think it was Greg, maybe it was Zola or Andy, but Storied Brand came up with bubbly, the bubbly IPA. And that's the descriptor we use to come up with this new style. That's this marriage of lager, seltzer, and IPA. Greg, you want to talk about it more or sing some of your past white space accolades?
No, I just think it came out of a approach that I've used since my New Belgium days, which is, I think that the standard brand manager innovation approach is to pick up the scan data and go, ooh, hazies are hot. We need to make a hazy, or hard seltzers are hot. We need to start making a hard seltzer. And it's, everybody's reacting to what's already been done. And granted, there's, everything has been done, and it's very hard to find a creative space out there. And there really is no true product innovation going on in beers and alcoholic beverages. But I think if you can combine branding with looking for places that other people haven't gone, I think you can find white space in there. And I really thought it's so important for Boulder Beer, being such an innovative pioneer in their day. And and we wanted to keep that alive and keep that pioneering spirit going. It's like, let's create something. You know, I asked Matt and his team, it's like, could you really create something that's like, you know, this Frankenstein beer that's part seltzer, part lager, part IPA? And they're like, yeah, we'll mess around with it. And a lot of test batches later, it's like, holy crap, we freaking nailed it. We've come up with our own style.
I think Hollywood says that you can predict what movie is going to be the next big hit next year based on what were the two biggest movies last year and then combining them, right? So, so it's a tested method in multiple industries.
I've sat in so many innovation meetings at brewery clients, and that's it. It starts by looking at the scan data. And I'm like, don't look at it for opportunities. Look beyond it or look through it. Let's find the things that are that no one else is seeing out there. Yeah. And I give credit to Dave Duffy, who's not on the call. He's really good at that too. He's always looking for like, what's everybody else missing? Let's go do something that nobody else is doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we talked about, like, as Greg's saying, you know, seltzer is still exploding, but even a year ago it was, you know, really coming on. And we were like, well, maybe, you know, Boulder has this transcendent value. How about a line of Boulder seltzers? And Storied Brand was like, I mean, yeah, we could do that, but like, why Boulder seltzer instead of anyone else's seltzer? Like, there's already so many seltzers, right? You know, like, we can ride the tidal wave, but we're already on the back of it, most likely. And that's not to say that like coming up with a new seltzer is a bad idea, because, you know, every week the data is like, oh, seltzer is continuing to crush and take more share. So I don't think that's a bad idea by any means, but we loved his idea to do something that was more progressive and forward thinking instead of reactive. And also, you know, kind of going back to what you were asking, Corey, about Boulder, we felt like we needed to do something to not just resurrect the brand, but try to return it to relevance. And so to come up with something that was brand new and like literally truly innovative in the literal sense of the word was a smart move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, that's the silver bow that we needed to tie on that. That's all. Eric, I am very curious though, because I used to work for Sierra Nevada, and they are an older brand as well. And I can't help but remember times where I'd walk into an account or something like that, and they're like, "Oh, I know that brand. They've been around for forever. We've had it before. We don't need it again," kind of thing. What are you guys walking into retailers with, walking into distributors with, the kind of with a little swagger to be like, "Oh, I know this is the Boulder beer you knew, but we've got some other stuff," or are you kind of leaning on some of the heritage?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both, actually. I mean, the heritage is a big piece of the brand, and I think it's really important to continue with that. But I mean, it's an easy story to tell right now. For all the reasons that we've just discussed, it's a completely different brand from a quality standpoint, from a branding standpoint, from the team that's really driving and behind the brand right now. So, you know, there's been a couple of complicated conversations. I think the original communication that Boulder Beer put out back, I think it was it October or maybe a little even before of 2019, where, you know, it's like we're done, we're shutting it down, and I think that conversation was a difficult one for a lot of wholesalers and retailers alike. And so coming back into that and saying, you know, essentially like, well, just kidding, we're not. Looks a little different now. And, you know, there's a whole nother piece of the story. And I guess this is the next generation of Boulder Beer. And I think the brand is more relevant now. I think the liquid is perhaps the best it's ever been. And, you know, the story is pretty easy to tell if we can get somebody to listen.
Yeah. Is the just so I know, is the production size about the same right now as to compared to what it has been, or has it been scaled down a bit? Like, what's the distribution kind of looking like? Because it does seem, and the reason I'm asking is only because it seems like such a unique opportunity to take a brand with a name like Boulder Beer that has value in everybody's drinking mind, so to speak, and an iconic name, to almost kind of scale back down a little bit and kind of pull the net in a little when you're fishing and just be like, okay, we have an opportunity to kind of restructure things how we want and kind of hit the reset button, although not entirely. So I guess I'm just kind of curious about that.
Yeah. You want me to take that or you want it, Matt?
Whatever you want. I'll say briefly on production, then you want to talk about the distribution. Production size, our brewery is different size, so it's a bit hard to compare apples to apples there. In terms of net volume, before Eric expands on distribution, you know, we're not quite at what Boulder was before their announcement, but that's for a few reasons. One, it's by design. Your fishing analogy is spot on, and I'm sure Eric will talk about that. We, you know, decided to trim the fat a little bit. COVID, number two. And then number three, as Eric already alluded to, you know, there was some emotional whiplash for sure there. You know, it was a bit of a roller coaster ride, like Boulder's closing. No, they're not. Sleeping Giant's coming in. Okay, but now we're actually going to close the pub. Wait, but does that mean you're closing everything? Because I thought Sleeping Giant was there. No, Sleeping Giant is here. It was like, it was a complicated thing to wade through. And so, you know, we're not back to that level yet, but we expect to get there in short order. And, you know, Eric, you want to chime in on the distribution?
Yeah, and you know, the other piece of that story was, oh, by the way, now Stem Ciders is involved. So, like, what? Where did that come from? Like,
a lot of moving parts.
just be patient with us. The story ends well, trust us. So, no, but, you know,
everyone else cleared it up.
there was a lot of places, a lot of wholesalers that, you know, maybe didn't make as much sense for us moving forward as it did in the past. And, you know, we've exited a few areas and we've opened a few new areas where it does make sense to align with STEM's wholesaler network. And so we've been moving some things around a little bit. Yes, taking a step back, looking at the markets that we're in from a strategic standpoint. Boulder Beer was in a lot of markets, and it still is. Making sure that the markets that we're in, that we are able to illustrate why we should be them, why should we be in those markets, and how we're relevant in those markets, and making sure that we're a good partner to the wholesalers that we have in those markets, so it's been our primary focus moving forward. So to echo what Matt said, yeah, we're down a bit from where Boulder Beer was before the announcement, but let's take a look at the data here at the end of this year, and I think we'll all be pretty impressed.
Now, I want to circle back to Greg real quick, because Greg, you know, you've worked with such iconic brands as New Belgium, Firestone Walker. I don't know if you want to share some of the other projects that you've done in the past, but it seems to me like you've had such great success of bringing relevancy to these, you know, heritage brands. Where do you see, and I know that you touched on this a little bit earlier, but what do you see for Boulder Beer as kind of the key in terms of kind of reinvigorating, aside from what's already been done now? Like, what can we look towards the future in terms of kind of re-energizing this brand as you all approach this relaunch?
Oof, that's a good question. I think we've been so breathing deep on just trying to get the launch campaign going, as well as get Bubbly by Nature out there, three rebrands, that we haven't had the luxury of that chance to do the long view yet and go, how are we going to keep this thing going? I think, as Eric was talking about, we need to be able to see the data to see what's worked and look at that and go, all right, here's probably how we need to be able to look forward. I feel like the strategy, the basic pillars of it is stuff that we've worked on at the Story brand before, that I know it's going to be successful. And it'll be a matter of moving it, and then also with the liquids too, moving it, adjusting it to kind of how the where we see the next opportunities out there, continuing to find those white spaces. And working in collaboration with Matt and his team and Eric and Duffy, we have a really strong team that I think has a lot of eyes on the outlook on this thing, and I feel like we're going to do really well. Different than a lot of other, you know, what's nice too is we're all fresh eyes to this. And that's a really interesting place to be, as opposed to a lot of these OG breweries. It used to work in the 90s and the aughts and the 10s. It's hard for them to give up on that. We don't have that baggage. We're free from that, and we can, we're very much a forward looking pioneer.
Very cool. Well, guys, I appreciate you guys joining us and telling us a little bit more of the story. Boulder Beer is now available across Colorado, but also in how many states now, Matthew?
Man, we're signing them up so fast these days that I legitimately have lost count. I'm going to say, our last official count was 28, but I think that since we did that, I think we've added 3. Wow. So let's call it 30 and change.
Fantastic.
Yes, the next big new one we're shipping to Texas next week. So that will be fun and an exciting launch.
Yeah. Go knock on Shiner's door, drop off a 6-pack.
Yeah,
Yeah. That's really exciting. And I assume people can go, they can find out if you're in their distribution network on your website. You have a beer finder, things of that nature, or?
So the new website launches approximately 3:15. So depending on when you release this podcast, besides the people watching live, that might be a true statement. Maybe we'll just hold the podcast for 6 days. But yeah, after that, that'll be the case. In the meantime, I would say social media is the best way to find out. And if if people are looking, they can just send a DM in through Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, whatever.
Slide into that distribution DM.
Just jump right in there. we've had a lot of people asking, a lot of people trying to find out where they can get the Laws Whiskey Barrel Aged Shake variant that we just did. That's a good way to get information before the website comes back out.
Absolutely. Yeah. Really, really excited about that Laws Barrel Aged Shake. First and foremost, Shake is one of my favorites in terms of just chocolate forward beers. But being able to kind of have that local tie in with a established distillery and Laws is pretty exciting as well. Really love that beer so far. So thanks, guys. Really appreciate you guys joining us on the show. You all are welcome to stick around, but we enjoyed chatting with you all today, and excited for the kind of the next steps for Boulder Beer. Meanwhile, we're going to take a short break, and then we'll come back with a couple of topics of news that has been happening in the beer world. But thanks for joining us, fellas.
Thank you.
For all of our Denver listeners or anyone visiting Denver, explore a land of adult beverage discovery at Molly's Spirits, offering a curated selection of beers, wines, spirits, and ciders in Lakeside and Greenwood Village, Colorado. Shop over 14,000 products, including an exclusive collab and extensive craft beer selection, in-store or online for curbside pickup or delivery. Learn more at mollyspirits.com. Corey, I want to touch a little bit on, there's been a couple big kind of moving parts from some big names in the industry. First and foremost, we saw the Deschutes acquired Boneyard Brewing out in the Pacific Northwest. Are you familiar with Boneyard? And obviously Deschutes is a very familiar brand, but what did you think of when you saw that kind of come across the news feed?
Well, RPM is one of my favorites. I had it included in an article that I wrote for Porch Drinking, like the ultimate mountain biking 6-pack over the summer, because they started canning it for the first time in, I think, the entire brewery's history. I think it was mostly a draft offering before. honestly, that's the connection to me right there. Deschutes is shrinking, so they're looking to acquire other, you know, not necessarily dabbling in other industries like we, or other segments like we see big breweries do when they like potentially come out with a seltzer or they come out with something else, whether it be a spirit or something along those lines. They saw an opportunity to grow their brand immediately or grow their revenue immediately by bringing in basically Boneyard's revenue. Sure. And then Boneyard has a new opportunity that they didn't necessarily foresee that for themselves until they started canning product. So Deschutes has this huge distribution network already. Boneyard has a new revenue stream in canning where they didn't have that before. So I think it's honestly, this one's kind of a win-win for me. I love both brands. It's not the same as a big brewery or a private equity necessarily, because I don't know if they're looking to, they're not looking to flip it, you know, that would be where I'd have some issues with it. But I think based on both of their needs, it's kind of a win-win.
Well, we talked a little bit about relevancy earlier in the Boulder beer discussion. This is definitely one that I feel like directly correlates with that, right? You know, you have Deschutes, which as you mentioned, I think has, you know, kind of peaked perhaps earlier in their craft beer ascendancy, and now is trying to re-inject some life into their kind of their fan base. You know, I think Deschutes has always been, you know, putting out some really, really killer beers, but as of recent years, I think some of them haven't been as hip to kind of the current trends. And so Boneyard is still one of those brands that I always view as kind of like, you know, an upstart brewery that's doing some fun, innovative stuff, especially around the hop kind of innovation side of things. And so I think this is an interesting approach. It definitely, you know, it's one that is needed because, as you mentioned, Deschutes is kind of needing a shot of life. So
Boneyard's a cool brand. Deschutes isn't necessarily, it's not a bad brand, but it was kind of boring, you know. It's like, get it. I this is what Mirror Pond looks like. I've never been there, but I can tell you exactly what it looks like to a certain degree, right? Yeah. Then they came out with Fresh Squeezed in that series, and that's done well, right? But to me, some of their new stuff that they've come out with, they have like a low-cal hazy IPA, and the branding on it to me is such a far cry from what it was, that it's kind of like when your dad shows up to, you're having friends over and your dad shows up and he's got like a sideways hat on and is wearing like a baggy tee. And he's like, hey guys, what's up? I came here to hang out too. As opposed to Boneyard, which is like, they're just a pretty cool brand without really having to try too hard.
Like that Steve Buscemi meme that's, what's happening, youths?
Yeah.
Kind of following along that same line, here locally, we saw the announcement of Left Hand Brewing announcing a Denver location in, surprise, surprise, the River North Art District. Who would have seen that one coming? What do you think about this move? Do you think this is the right kind of decision for them? You know, we had reported earlier in the pandemic when it looked like Left Hand was going to be moving into the Five Points neighborhood, in the former Liberati space. That obviously didn't work out due to kind of leasing disagreement. But I actually, in my opinion, this might be kind of a better move for them, just in terms of proximity to the Mission Ballroom and having all of that kind of potential, foot traffic flow through if, you know, once music does eventually get back in the flow of things. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it would have been nice to have them open up that spot in Five Points because it is such an iconic Denver neighborhood that's so close to Rhino. And arguably, depending on who you ask, that's what Rhino is five. It's the Five Points neighborhood, right? So
exactly.
Depends on how you catch a local, if they're on a good day or a bad day, if they want to argue with that about you. But I mean, they need to move down here regardless of the location, to be honest. Being in Rhino makes it a little easier because you get all the foot traffic and it's a tourist destination. Honestly, I think they could have picked anywhere and it still would have been a good move for them. You have to consider that Great Divide's in a bit of a restructuring phase right now. So, you know, they're going to be anchoring in pretty deep to the one location they do have to find some relevancy. There's Odell not only opened up their tap room in our pilot brewery in Rhino, but they have their new actual brewery going in Sloan's Lake area near Edgewater. So if they don't make a move, somebody else already is, and more people are going to.
Well, I think that's one thing I want to jump in on real quick. You mentioned Great Divide. Obviously, that is probably the closest brewery of that size to them, to that new location. Mm-hmm. Obviously the Barrel Bar didn't work out enough for them to continue to, you know, stay there. Do you think that that's any sort of a concern at all?
I think they're already concerned, if I'm going to be completely honest. I mean, I don't think you would be making a move like this and wanting to establish a tap room in, because that otherwise things have been going fine, right? Like, I think a lot of times, especially if you're coming in a little late to the game in terms of setting up a tap room or a tasting room in another city, it's because it's that goes right back to that other thing. You need to, A, you need some additional revenue, but then B, I mean, hey, this city's growing by leaps and bounds. And in order to be relevant, like people just aren't, not a lot of people are driving up to Longmont. I mean, they might've when there weren't as many breweries, but now there's no point. Like somebody comes to Denver, unless they have a really special place in their heart for Left Hand, they're not going to drive up to Longmont. Right. So you have to have something down here because it's where things are happening.
Totally. And finally, I want to close out the show to give a big shout out for International Women's Day, which happened just yesterday. We just saw some a big announcement today from Narragansett Beer, who announced Lee Lord as their new head brewer. Lee Lord, for those who have followed the industry, has, you know, an illustrious brewing career. She spent time at Smutty Nose and Cambridge Brewing most recently, I believe. And now she's helming Narragansett, which is, you know, a huge, huge brand and something that I'm really stoked about. And, you know, really rad to see kind of that kind of ascendancy in her career. So, you know, we're to kind of follow up on some of the incredible things that women are doing in beer. Julia Hers just recently launched, who we had on the show last episode, recently launched her Gray Is Okay kind of campaign, and we're really stoked to see kind of her kind of development of her own agency. So really huge shout outs to both of those incredible women in the beer industry, and we're excited to follow their careers along the next steps.
Yeah, I couldn't have been more excited when Narragansett came out with like a seasonal line a couple of years ago. They came out with this Autocrat Milks. Do you know what Autocrat is?
I don't know.
Like a chocolate, it's like a coffee milk kind of thing. It's not chocolate milk. It's a very Rhode Island thing. So what they did is they took two very big Rhode Island brands, Autocrat and Dells, which makes like a lemonade. Yeah. So they made like a Dells summer shandy, like lemonade shandy. They put in 16-ounce cans. Then they had an Autocrat coffee milk stout that they also put like in 16-ouncers. And the Gans is always going to be like one of my favorites just because I'm from the Northeast, but it's the PBR of New England, if you will. So it's really cool to just see them continuing to innovate, bring on really good people.
All right. And officially, I've lost the pool. How long did it take Corey to mention Narragansett in a podcast? I think Tristan
lost it? You thought it was going to be sooner?
I was betting we're like right away. I think that was like the first couple words you were going to say. Tristan, I think you won this one. Just officially, yeah. I just wanted
to. And to be fair, I didn't even bring it up. Tristan did. So.
You know, sometimes I gotta lay one up for my buddy.
That's true.
Yeah, Utica Club, baby, all day.
There it is.
I'll take a UC over a Gansett, though.
Well, yeah, no, I'm stoked because I love Gansett as well, and so it's cool to see them continue to go along the lines of innovation. Which, you know, it can be hard for a brand that focuses so solely on that lager kind of mainstay. But it's definitely with this hire, I think they're going to continue to do some really cool stuff.
Yeah. And one shout out I do have to give would be to Alyssa Thorpe down at Jagged Mountain Brewery. We were, so for anybody that doesn't know, I have another brand, like a podcast and stand-up comedy series called Rotating Tap. And she helped us make this really awesome video about how to be a craft beer social media influencer, which will be coming out like in the next couple weeks. And she was so generous with the space, her time. She's super fun and she makes really great beers. So I would be absolutely remiss if I didn't mention her and give her a shout out for International Women's Day yesterday.
Nice. Really stoked on that. Well, guys, thanks again for joining us for this episode. Corey, it's great to have you join as co-host. And Brian, thanks for running the ones and twos once again. Really big shout out goes out to Matthew Osterman, Eric Foster, and Greg Owsley who are the brain trust behind the relaunch of Boulder Beer. Really cool to hear their story. And a big thank you once again to Molly Spirits. This has been episode 77 of the Porchcast. I'm Tristan. We'll catch you next time. Check you later.
See ya.